from Iowa Public Radio News. This is a mini-series called The Procrastinator's Politics.
I just want to emphasize the degree to which we are in serious times, and this is a really serious job. This is not entertainment.
They're bringing drugs.
This is not a reality.
They're rapists.
This is a contest for the presidency of the United States.
We cannot sit back and hope that everything works out for the best.
She's promising another Obama.
Let's go out and win the election.
Get out and
bless you.
Did you know that in Canada, the election cycle is limited to just 36 days? Are you jealous? I mean, Hillary Clinton has been campaigning since officially June 2015, and Trump has been campaigning maybe since 2011.
Donald Trump has been saying that he will run for president as a Republican, which is surprising since I just assumed he was running as a joke.
That was Seth Meyers from the 2011 Correspondents' Dinner. Since then, millions of dollars have been spent on electioneering and contributing to the news coverage that you've been hearing all of the time. But think about ways that you might step away from the election coverage. For me, I love watching Saturday Night Live, Late Night with Stephen Colbert, The Tonight Show. Because of how ugly this election has been, there's been some pretty great, but sometimes ruthless jokes.
Thank you, Hillary Clinton, for saying this week that we may have already been visited by aliens from space. And raising the question, if you're willing to say that out loud, what the hell were you hiding in those emails?
Donald Trump told supporters last night to go out and vote on November 28th, when Election Day is actually November 8th, unless November 8th is just a lie being spread by the liberal media. You know what? If you're a Trump supporter, you should probably just go with whatever he says.
That was the Jimmy Fallon from The Tonight Show and Seth Meyers from Late Night. So, I set out on the streets of Iowa City to see how people are getting away from the election.
I'm not sure if it is possible to take a break. I think I do what everybody else does, and that's just kind of try to tune it out and focus on other things. Yeah.
I usually just, like, get away from my phone and, like, the TV and just, like, take a nap or something to, like, get away from it.
Shut Facebook off, shut everything off, and just, it's all you can do because everything's got it everywhere. I actually trust the media less now because of all the stuff.
I mean, it's almost impossible because, like, every time I go on Facebook, it's always, like, every other video is something about what Trump said and, like something racist that he said again and how he, some, like, stuff that he said about women and, like, degrading them. So, I try to, like, not be involved in that by, like, commenting or anything like that and, like, reposting, but because I don't really want to, like, I'm kind of done with it, so yeah.
Does all of this make you sick of the election?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting tired of hearing about all the different stuff.
I'm not quite sick of it. I'm ready for the day that we can vote.
I'm sick of it, yeah. It's like two kids fighting. I'm over it, so...
I always enjoy these sorts of things, down and dirty, the same way anyone might enjoy, like, a reality TV.
Of course, though, much like myself, people are enjoying the comedic romping that has come out of this fall.
I like the remix videos of, like, when they, I don't know, when they just, like, make a mashup of everything, like, stupid that he said, and then put something, like, a song or something, like, in the background.
Just the impressions of Donald Trump. And even Kate McKinnon's the impersonation of Hillary Clinton has been pretty good as well.
Ken Bone, he's my favorite right now. I love how he showed up to the debate. I like that he's undecided, and I also just like that he had a disposable camera. That's the best part of it.
There was that media craze over a pretty average guy and a pretty average question, and then, of course, he ended up being kind of a creep. But
okay, I like his style. I want to get that red sweater.
That was Thomas, Michael, Pearl, Julia, Sam, and Laura here in Iowa City. And I'm Shirley Wong, and this is The Procrastinator's Politics. On this podcast, we make it easy for you to tackle that daunting task you've been avoiding, preparing for the election. What surprised me when I was talking to people on the streets is that a lot of people are still really engaged because they know how important this election is. So let's get back on the campaign trail, starting with last week's news, which focused on the aftermath of an uncovered video in which Donald Trump laughed casually and joked about grabbing and assaulting women. Though Republican State Representative Ken Reiser of Cedar Rapids says he can't support GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump Governor Terry Branstad told reporters that he's proud of how the Republican leadership has stuck together.
It's important that we recognize that we're part of a team and that a lot is at stake in this election. And I think when you're part of a party and you're part of leadership, it's important to work together and support the team. And I'm doing everything I can.
Reiser withdrew his support after a video surfaced of Trump bragging about sexually assaulting women. Reiser says in a Facebook post that Trump lacks the character to be the commander-in-chief. He says he plans instead to write in Trump's running mate, Indiana Governor Mike Pence. And speaking of the GOP vice presidential nominee, Mike Pence was in Newton on Tuesday. IPR's Sarah Bowden has more.
Pence says he was offended by Trump's comments, but told supporters in Newton that Trump's apology shows humility. Pence also says next month's election isn't so much a choice between two people, but between two futures.
I choose a stronger America. I choose a more prosperous America. I choose an America that respects our Constitution and our highest ideals, and so I choose to stand with Donald Trump.
Pence highlighted Trump's plans to cut taxes and build up the military. He also says Trump will nominate jurists to the federal bench who are like the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. In Newton, I'm Sarah Bowden, Iowa Public Radio News.
Former President Bill Clinton launched a two-day bus tour of Iowa on Wednesday on behalf of his wife, Hillary Clinton. Iowa Public Radio's Clay Masters was at his first stop in Indianola and has this report.
Speaking at Simpson College before a couple hundred people, the former president never mentioned the name of his wife's Republican opponent, but he referenced Donald Trump many times.
You can't run a country if we can only trust or identify with somebody who's just like us.
Bill Clinton says the country needs to be more inclusive.
I do not believe we can deal with episodic terrorism at home or the challenges we face around the world if we don't embrace all the hardworking, incredibly contributing Muslim Americans who love freedom and hate terror. We need them. They need to be part of our America.
In Indianola, Clay Masters, Iowa Public Radio News.
Iowa GOP Chair Jeff Kaufman says he's not worried about the unity of the Republican Party. That's in spite of the fact that scores of elected Republicans are refusing to support or defend presidential nominee Donald Trump, including several of Iowa's state lawmakers. And Kaufman questions the sincerity of Republicans who have publicly unendorsed Trump.
I've always questioned the actual attack of conscience that one has if they feel the need to have that internal conversation on social media. You know, when I make a heart-wrenching decision, the last thing I want to do is put it out there for hundreds or even thousands of people to see.
The head of Iowa's Democratic Party says there's a lot of work to heal past wounds since the caucuses. Many saw the party establishment favoring Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders, and some say this has hurt Clinton with Iowans during the general election. But Chair Andy McGuire says voters are excited about the Democratic presidential candidate.
I think what Hillary Clinton did when she changed some policies to be more like Bernie Sanders, that we really have tried to make sure all of our Democrats are comfortable with where we are. And I think when they look at the choice here between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, they are very much in the Democratic corner.
The latest Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll shows Clinton trailing GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump by 4 points. Though that poll was conducted before the 2005 video surfaced. The race for Congress in Iowa's 2nd District pits the lone Democrat in the state's congressional delegation against a Republican challenger who until recently aligned with the Libertarian Party. It's a contest in which both candidates are viewed as moderates. IPR's Rob Dillard has the second of our reports on Iowa's congressional races.
The 2nd District covers 24 counties, stretching from Clinton to Keokuk down the Mississippi River to Newton and Pella in central Iowa, along the southern border to Leon, and it includes the liberal bastion of Iowa City. Although the shape of the district has morphed, since 2006 it has been represented by Democrat Dave Loebsack. The 63-year-old former political science professor at Cornell College upset 15-term Congressman Jim Leach to win his seat in Washington. He has long cited the role government assistance played in allowing him to move from a single-parent household in Sioux City, where his mother battled mental illness, to a Ph.D. and a college teaching job. He talked about it again during a forum sponsored by the League of Women Voters and the Johnson County Task Force on Aging.
I didn't do it just because I worked hard. I did it because I had opportunities that were provided to me. I had a lot of financial aid when I was going to college. When my dad died, I got Social Security survivor benefits that got me through college.
He says if elected to a sixth term, he will concentrate on lifting the middle class from the throes of the economic slowdown.
Making sure we deepen the economic recovery, it isn't as good as it should be. Folks are still hurting. Folks who are back to work aren't earning necessarily what they earned prior to the Great Recession.
He says another priority, if he returns to Congress, is to invest in renewable energy, including wind, solar, and biofuels. Standing in his way is Coralville surgeon Christopher Peters, owner of Corridor Surgery and Vein Center. The 56-year-old ran for an Iowa Senate seat in 2010 as a Libertarian. Even though he's on the ballot as a Republican this time around, he says party affiliation doesn't mean much to him.
I pick my principles based upon whether I think the principles are worth having, not based on whether one party holds them or not.
As a result, he's the rare Republican in Iowa to completely drop support for the party's presidential candidate.
When my wife referred to Donald Trump as a pig, I thought we had crossed the Rubicon there, and we decided we had to do something about it.
He will not, however, vote for Hillary Clinton for president and says he does not plan to endorse anyone. The one area on which Peters does line up closely with Republicans is the economy, which he touched on during the same forum in Coralville where Loebsack appeared.
I think our biggest problem, and there are many, is our debt. It is a huge drag on the economy. It means that money is going to cover our debt and not going into productive investments.
Iowa's 2nd District skews strongly Democratic. The political columnist for the Des Moines Register, Kathy Obradovich, sees no signs that will change.
There hasn't been a lot of polling in these congressional races, so you know it's hard to say definitively, but it looks to me like Dave Loebsack has a pretty safe race for re-election.
The 75 or so people who filled a conference room at the Coralville Public Library for the candidate's joint appearance seemed pleased to listen in on a civil discussion addressing a number of pressing topics. Cindy Riley owns a small business in Coralville.
We saw such a nice contrast between local issues, state issues, federal issues, international. So good overall variety of topics. Always good to hear. They both did an excellent job.
During the 90-minute exchange, Congressman Loebsack and Dr. Peters even agreed on such hot-button issues as immigration reform and reworking the tax code to favor the middle class. And they did it in measured tones while sitting cordially side by side. An unusual sight in modern politics. In Coralville, I'm Rob Dillard, Iowa Public Radio News.
A lot of Republicans decided to disassociate from Trump. Ben Kiefer talked with political experts about how Trump can pull together enough votes from the GOP establishment. Here's Donna Hoffman from the University of Northern Iowa and Dave Anderson from Iowa State University on River to River.
Donna, let me go to you first of all. Trump and the GOP establishment have not been on the best of terms this whole campaign, of course. What do these latest developments mean?
Well, interesting from that clip that you played of Donald Trump, he said something about, you know, basically I don't need the establishment people. And he really kind of does in a way, because what he has done in the debate, for example, and now his comments about the establishment, that the shackles are off essentially, doubles down on his base. And that's a strategy that he's apparently okay with, but he doesn't have enough of a base to actually win the general election. And so, especially from that second debate, we saw him really double down on some of the things that he previously had talked about. And it really did excite the people who were already Donald Trump supporters. It's those people who are on the fence, who maybe are supporting Trump but aren't wild about him, that he has to worry about alienating, because he needs those people if he's going to get to the White House. He can't get to the White House just by boosting up his base. He can get them enthused. That is certainly true. He can guarantee that they're going to go to the polls. But he has to expand that. And the strategy that he's kind of moved to in the last 5 days or so doesn't look fruitful in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Dave Anderson, I'm seeing now just a few hours old report from the Washington Post. Now that it's crystal clear, writes the Washington Post, Trump will not quit. He has unshackled himself, plans to limp across the finish line. Now some Republicans who called on him to drop out over the weekend are reversing themselves. One pointed to senior senator from Nebraska, Deb Fischer, tweeting on the weekend that she was the comments of Donald Trump in that video, disgusting, totally unacceptable under any circumstance. It would be wise for him to step aside and allow Mike Pence to serve as the party's nominee. But yesterday, during a radio interview, she announced she will vote for Trump after all. So the analysis here, perhaps the blowback is big for those who defected over the weekend.
Yes. A lot of Republicans have been put in rather an impossible situation right now, where if they go out against Donald Trump, they're really at risk of losing his supporters. Those supporters may come to the polls, vote for Donald Trump, and then not vote for Republicans who refuse to endorse him. And as a Republican, it's hard to win if you don't have Republicans voting for you. Conversely, if you choose to endorse him and say you don't like what he said, but you're still going to vote for him, then you run the risk of alienating independents, and you're never going to get Democrats voting for you. But so you really have to make a very, very difficult calculation about, in your specific district, what kind of votes are more important to you. Can you win with just Republican votes? And I think if you look at the map, in a lot of safe Republican districts, people are still saying, you know what, I endorse Trump because I need Republican votes.
Let's talk about Senator Joni Ernst. She's a freshman senator, just elected the last election in 2014. She sent a tweet over the weekend denouncing the contents of the vulgar 2005 recording of Trump. Though this Monday, she explained that while she does not condone or excuse Trump's actions, the election is bigger than Donald Trump, and it is about the direction of the company. The country. Let's listen.
I am voting for my Republican Party, and I've told others I'm not fighting for Donald Trump. I am fighting for my country.
Okay. As of this weekend, Joni Ernst is the only Republican woman serving in the U.S. Senate who has not called for Donald Trump to step aside or vowed not to vote for him. Five of six GOP senators, female senators, have. Donna Hoffman, comment on that. Joni Ernst, also a political calculation, you believe?
Yeah, and I mean, it's trying to thread the needle here. But, you know, look at, you brought up Deb Fischer earlier from neighboring Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
And over the weekend, she said, you know, I think that we should replace him as the nominee. Essentially, she indicated support for Pence in that regard. And now she's walked that back. And she kind of did it in a really odd fashion. And part of that calculation, you know, is that she indicated in her statement was that, well, we were trying to put pressure on Donald Trump. Well, the pressure didn't work. He said, under no circumstances will I, you know, get out. And so then a couple of three now of the people at last count who had said he shouldn't be our nominee have walked it back now. And so he intimidated them or something to that effect. They heard from their constituents is likely what happened, in that they didn't like the fact that they had people in the Senate in particular saying that I don't like these comments, and going further than Joni Ernst did there, saying, and also I think that he shouldn't be our nominee. And some of those people have walked that back because Donald Trump's not going anywhere. And, you know, if you want to compare Joni Ernst to Deb Fischer, how, you know, Deb Fischer's not on the or Joni Ernst, either one, aren't up for election this time. But, you know, how do they fare then in the future, given that, you know, Joni Ernst seemingly threaded that needle perhaps better than Senator Fisher did.
Mm-hmm. Does it also have something to do with the fact that also Joni Ernst will not be up for re-election, given a six-year term for a senator, until 2020?
That's correct. And okay. So she has some space there in which, you know, voters forget an awful lot of things. And so she, you know, she came out and said the comments are reprehensible, but I'm going to support my party's nominee. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out, because still there are a lot of things that could potentially develop here. But there are some people looking at the actions of senators in particular over the weekend that think they may have been a bit too hasty, because some of those have then walked that statement back.
Donna Hoffman, to talk about how Donald Trump is doing with certain demographic groups, African-Americans, Latinos, other groups, women. He's not doing well enough in these demographic groups to poll better, is he?
He's not. And, you know, if you look at the things that he has said, you know, the Judge Curiel in Indiana, the Mexican judge who Mexican heritage judge who he said, you know, wasn't qualified to judge in his case. He's had various comments about lots of different groups, women, African-Americans as well. And he needs to, again, to win a general election, expand into those kinds of audiences, because the base isn't enough, as I've said repeatedly here. And, you know, one of the callers, you know, talked about the experience of women. He's doing historically poorly with women, in part because, you know, his comments that came out in that Access Hollywood video should not have really been news. He's written about that kind of thing in his books. He's on record in lots of areas as essentially not having a very good opinion of women.
So
and that has impacted his numbers with women. Having said that, though, there are still women that support him. But, you know, again, the margins there of women not supporting him have grown.
So all these people who are surprised at this video talk that Donald Trump had recorded, is that feigned surprise, or they're just not paying attention?
Well, I don't know that it was feigned surprise, but maybe this was the straw that broke the camel's back, because it was audio and video. It wasn't, you know, something that we're reading about in the newspaper or in a book, and it got a lot of play as well. And it was shocking, I think, to hear that come out of Trump's mouth, rather than having to read it, you know, secondhand out of the newspaper or in one of his books, those kinds of things.
Donna Hoffman is the chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Northern Iowa, and Dave Anderson is an assistant professor at Iowa State University. They talked with Ben Kiefer on River to River. We've also been hearing from the candidates for U.S. Senate in Iowa, and Democrat Patty Judge talked with Ben Kiefer back in August, and he asked her whether or not Grassley's support for Trump has swayed any voters to support Trump as well.
I really don't know, Ben. You know, it is kind of a mystery to me why Chuck Grassley has chosen to stand beside Donald Trump, to embrace him and his campaign. In my opinion, Donald Trump does not speak for the values of Iowa, the values of inclusiveness and of equal opportunity. And again, I am sort of baffled by why Chuck Grassley thinks that's all right. I believe at the end of the day, next November, people will not choose to vote for Donald Trump. Because of his views on these issues that I think are important Iowa values, and I really believe that that this is also a deciding factor in the race between Senator Grassley and I.
Mm-hmm. Will there be consequences past this election for Charles Grassley, you think, due to his support of Trump? He's been a legacy here in Iowa, an important figure for a long time.
He has been in politics a long time in Iowa. He, in the past, was viewed as a pretty independent voice for Iowa, someone who had Iowa's best interests at heart. I think that we are seeing now that he has changed, that he has moved further to the right. and that he is, in fact, part of the establishment in Washington, D.C. And I think that when that happens, when you become part of the fabric of an establishment like that, then it's past time for a change. I think that that voters are ready for that change here. And again, he certainly has had a long run, but things do change. And this is where we are.
Patty Judge, we have a few people asking questions about your time as lieutenant governor on Twitter. Let me just sort of summarize those. You were part of the Culver Judge administration, known for iJobs, also a legislative session, according to this tweet. That left Iowans with a 10% across-the-board budget cut. The Culver Judge administration lasted one term. So your last run for statewide office was unsuccessful. Why do you think you can be more successful now in 2016?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that, we were in the worst recession since the Great Depression, and that was not just an Iowa issue. That was a national issue. Certainly, it was a rough time. We went through a flood in 2008, which was unprecedented in the history of our state. We came out of that flood stronger and better as a state. We were able to do that and keep the state budget balanced. And, I'm very proud of the work that we did at that time and the fact that Iowa as a whole, and particularly the cities on the Iowa and Cedar Rivers, are back today more vibrant and functioning.
Yeah, but the voters of Iowa didn't seem to think that the Culver Judge administration should be extended.
Well, again, it was coming out of a recession. It was certainly not a Democratic year. Sometimes you get caught up in things, and that's kind of what happened back at that point in time. We had to make tough decisions, and we made those. We talked straight with people. We let them absolutely know where we were. And again, there was never a day that the state finances were not in the black. Again, I'm proud of that record, and I will stand by that. This is very different than what's going on in Washington, D.C., that Charles Grassley has been a part of, the multi-billion or trillion-dollar budget deficits that are going on in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about earmarks. The bridge to nowhere, we remember that phrase from years ago, was a potent example of how irresponsible spending that eventually got earmarks. These are congressionally designated spending for specific projects. They were banned. And although earmarks were often referred to as pork barrel spending, they made up a very small portion, less than 1% of the federal budget. But they also provided incentive for members of Congress to compromise, to support each other's proposals in the interest of getting spending for their states. Would you support, Patty Judge, the reinstatement of earmarks as a means of encouraging compromise in Congress at this time?
No, I really wouldn't. I think earmarks became a tool of for special interests, and that it was proper that that those earmarks go away. That does not mean that working together in a bipartisan way should go away, and I'm not sure that you should have to have a carrot in order to do that. Should be the goal. Mm-hmm. That should be the goal that that legislators have after elections are over. Put down as much as possible the partisan politics. Start thinking about real, serious solutions. Find common ground.
Right.
Build
but how,
on
how,
that.
How do you do that, Patty Judge? Work with members of Congress, for instance, from urban states to get things like the Farm Bill done for Iowa.
Well, I think that can be done. Of course, throughout my life, I've been a mediator and as well as a legislator. And I've always believed that if you listen and don't just immediately automatically assume that someone is wrong and you're right, but actually listen to a point of view, that you're able to find some common ground. I think this is the piece that somehow has gotten lost in Washington right now. It's the piece that we need to bring back. I believe we can do it. It's going to take some changes of some people in some of the seats in order to accomplish that, and that's what this election is about.
Patty Judge, my guest, seeking to unseat six-term Republican Senator Charles Grassley, the Democratic Party's choice for nominee to the U.S. Senate. Last week, Patty Judge, when he was in Iowa, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, also former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack, urged Iowa lawmakers to act on water quality and said that lawmakers should, quote, lock the door and not come out until they've got a plan. So should the state or federal government regulate to solve this problem of water quality? And we all acknowledge we have a water quality problem, especially here in Iowa.
Well, this is really the solution has got to be a partnership between the state, well, actually more than a two-way partnership, because this partnership also has to include individual landowners and communities, as well as the state and the federal government. This is a big, big issue, and as you said, particularly here in Iowa, it's a huge issue. And Secretary Vilsack is absolutely correct that this plan needs to be developed immediately, that this needs to be a top priority both in our state and in our nation. We're going to write a new farm bill in January, and we need to make certain that that bill includes components. Strong components for conservation and water quality measures. Likewise, here in the state, legislators and the governor need to really seriously address this coming session, these issues. And I believe they need to fund the Conservation Trust Fund and do that immediately to start building that long-term sustainable funding stream for this work that has to be done.
What do you have to say to farmers who don't want the EPA through the Waters of U.S. Act to be dictating what should be happening in the little streams that run across their property, their drainage ditches? That's not where the federal government should be. What do you say to these farmers?
Well, I think we have to be careful when we write rules that we're not talking about mud puddles and little ditches and so forth. You know, we have a huge issue here. We are a heavily tilled state. We are a state that does have a lot of runoff. And I think it's time that we have to own that fact. We've got to start developing serious programs to curb the water runoff off of our farm fields and start to clean up our water. There is going to be a price tag to that, and we have to be willing to understand that. Again, this is a part of a big discussion that needs to be part of the agricultural discussion in writing the farm bill. It needs to be a huge discussion this year and in the Iowa legislature. We are past time that this thing has been put off too long. Let me say it that way, mm-hmm. and it needs to be up front this year. And we cannot, we can't have farmers take the total blame here or the total bill for this. But certainly, agriculture is a part of it, as are many other factors. And, we've got to find solutions. And again, I think back in 2010, when we had the constitutional amendment on the ballot to form the Conservation Trust Fund, that was proper. It certainly was voted by well over 50%. I think 60-some% of Iowans voted for that. It's time to get it funded, to get a program developed here in the state of Iowa that looks at research, looks at metrics, looks at being a very serious program to start and continue this work that we need to do on our water. You know, one of the frustrations that I've always had in government is our enthusiasm for a project and then losing enthusiasm too fast. Mm-hmm. We can't let that happen with this critical issue. This is going to be a long-term a program that we're going to have to be committed to in order to get the work done that has to be done to protect the water, clean up the water, make certain that generations after ours have got some clean water.
Mm-hmm. Patty Judge, so many questions left. I'd like to have you briefly respond to a few of them. Also, another ag question here. The renewable fuel standard, the RFS, as it's called, is the amount of ethanol, other renewable fuels that must be blended into our nation's gasoline. When the RFS levels were announced for this year, they increased the goal, but not as much as anticipated. I wonder, you stand behind the RFS and increasing the levels, but environmentalists also are saying we're moving in the process of moving beyond corn-based ethanol, even though Iowa has a lot invested in corn-based ethanol. Are we at a point where the RFS is outdated or getting outdated?
I think the RFS, as it was written and for the time period that it was written to be in effect, is critically important to us. You know, this industry, this whole industry of ethanol, biofuels, began here in our state, and we have watched it refine. We are now looking at the next generation with cellulosic ethanol, and who knows what's after that. I mean, this is, to me, is just incredibly exciting, because who knows what the next step is. And that needs to happen right here in Iowa. We've been the leader in that. We've been the leader in wind energy. We can be a leader in solar energy. But we have to stay with this. Again, this is not...
For how long?
As long as it takes. As long as the RFS is written to be law, we need to uphold that law. But I'm saying beyond that, the state of Iowa needs to understand how important renewable energy is to our state, not only as an industry providing good jobs across the state, but it's also important to the larger picture, because this is an industry that is going to lessen the dependence on fossil fuels, and it's really going to help us begin this to change this course of climate warming that we see today.
Mm-hmm. Patty Judge, Senate Republicans, most notably your opponent, Senator Grassley, who is chair of the Judiciary Committee, have so far refused to schedule a confirmation hearing for Merrick Garland. Garland, nominated by President Obama to fill a vacancy on the court, left when Justice Scalia died. That was back in February. You and your campaign have tried to make this a central issue with voters. In fact, it's arguably the reason you jumped into the race, but it's pretty much faded from the news in many ways. Why do you think this issue of not getting that ninth seat filled, why isn't it getting more traction with voters?
Well, I think maybe you're underestimating the traction that it does have for voters. I very rarely am in a public place, but what this issue has not brought up to me. It's brought up to me, in fact, more than I bring it up today. People are concerned. People view this as a black eye on Iowa. The fact that Chuck Grassley is from Iowa, that he is our senior senator, that he's the head of the Judiciary Committee, and that he is now presiding over a committee that is failing to do its job. People are concerned about that, and they should be. And they view it that Grassley has changed. That this is not something that Chuck Grassley of 10 years ago would do. It's just something that the Chuck Grassley today does. Again, this is a serious issue aside from anything else. The fact that we have hobbled the Supreme Court by leaving it with 8 members, and that is okay somehow with Chuck Grassley and his Republican caucus, is wrong. And
what do you think of the argument that Senator Grassley makes, and people who support him would say perhaps it's reasonable, let the election decide who nominates the next Supreme Court justice?
Well, first of all, election did decide. We elect presidents for 4 years, and we elected Barack Obama, and his term does not end until next January. And so we have a president. Government is not supposed to stop. That really is the design of our government, is that it continues, that we have a seamless exchange of government every 4 years. So that whole premise is false. And in fact, this length of time is the longest ever between a vacancy on the Supreme Court and a hearing to replace. And it's just wrong, and people know that. people know that, and we are not going to buy any political arguments. The truth of the matter is Chuck Grassley's holding this seat so that Donald Trump will have an opportunity to make a nomination. He's making that bet that Donald Trump is going to be in the White House next January. First of all, I would bet that Donald Trump will not be in the White House next January. Then Hillary Clinton will have an opportunity to make that nomination. And I would also bet that if he waits until January, he may also be out of a job.
Mm-hmm. You're betting that Hillary Clinton will be our next president. Looking at the Electoral College map, Iowa, it's very close here in Iowa. Why do you think your fellow Iowans are, when you are very much behind Hillary Clinton, why are there so many Donald Trump backers?
Well, I think you know, Iowa is always purple. We're a purple state. We're a political state, probably the most politically divided state in the nation due to all of our involvement. So I'm not surprised that we are at the place we are. Again, I believe that as we go into the stretch here, the post-Labor Day to November stretch, that you'll see those numbers increase for Hillary Clinton. Again, there is an undecided vote out there. You know, 20% of the people probably have not made a decision yet about who they're going to vote for. And I think that's going to largely break for Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Finally, we just have about a minute for this response. If I could, Patty, Judge Ag, ask this question. You said Senator Grassley's part of the establishment. He's been there for decades, six-term Republican Senator Charles Grassley. But you can also look at it another way in that Senator Grassley has a lot of clout. He has established working relationships, and his seniority in the Senate is unmatched. Why trade that? If you're in the position of a voter, why trade that for a newcomer in Washington?
Well, in short, because I have a short time, I will tell you that when you don't use that seniority for the people that you are representing, when you turn your back on Iowa, it really doesn't do you very much good. It doesn't do us much good here to have someone who is firmly part of the hierarchy, the Mitch McConnell hierarchy of the United States Senate. I think it's time for a fresh face in the Senate. In fact, it's time for several fresh faces in the Senate, and someone who is firmly looking out after the interests of the state of Iowa, and I will do that.
That was Patty Judge, former Iowa Secretary of Agriculture and Lieutenant Governor, who is a Democrat running for U.S. Senate. She spoke with Ben Kiefer. Next week, we'll have the latest news from the campaign trail, a profile of Iowa's 3rd Congressional District race, and an interview with Michael Lewick Thrams, an independent candidate for U.S. Senate. I'm Shirley Wong, and this has been The Procrastinator's Politics. Join us next week here on iowapublicradio.org. Oh, and one last thing.
I went from last night having 7 Twitter followers, 2 of which were my grandmother because she had to remake her account when she forgot her password, to now I have several hundred.
Ken Bone, everyone. Ah, love that guy.